Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. We should know that personal finance isn't about being rich or getting rich quick. It's about buying independence and freedom of choice. You are not alone as you struggle with being the perfect wife, mother, daughter, daughter-in-law, and all the other traditional roles assigned to us by our culture. These pressures can feel overwhelming, and when we add the demands of a career on top of it all, many women choose to pass on dealing with money issues until they're forced to. And that's not the best time to learn. Here we explore the stories of women and how they've handled the demands of finances, family, and career. We talk about falling short of perfection, but also about the lessons we've learned and the best advice our peers have to offer for financial security and putting our perceived failures in their proper place. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with that with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Lori Jones. Welcome, Lori.
Oh, so happy to be here.
Let me tell everybody a little something about you, because I know we have what we would call a bio. So, and since this is your world, I want to make sure I get it right. As a marketing integration guru, Lori has knowledge and experience in all aspects of branding, marketing, advertising, PR, and digital and social programs. Where she truly shines, however, is in her ability to bring each of those areas together. She participates in strategy development and big picture program planning with her team at Avocet Communications to bring a real world vision that increases customer count for some of the nation's leading brands. She's co-author of Secrets of Ad Agency Owners, Our Best Marketing Advice, and Secrets of Ad Agency Owners, The Biggest Mistake I've Ever Seen. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. Jones publishes the Integrate and Ignite blog and podcast, both of which focus on integrating marketing, leadership, and entrepreneurialism. She is a member of the Forbes Agency Council and serves on the board of several nonprofits. So, Lori, I know that's only a little piece of it, but tell me something about that book that you wrote with the subtitle of The Biggest Mistake I've Ever Seen.
Well, I tell you, I need to let you know that there have been many mistakes that I have made over the years, but the sea of sameness is something that I think is very important, and that's what the chapter focuses on in that book. And what I'm referring to is how customers market their products and the mistakes that they make, not necessarily me. And it starts with the fact that most people are more comfortable making themselves look like they belong in an industry, their product, their service. There, you know, it could be a retailer as well, versus differentiating themselves in that industry. And that's why I titled the chapter, The Sea of Sameness. If you can deploy good audience segmentation and good buyer personas and do a competitive review and develop messaging strategies that truly do differentiate, then the sea of sameness won't be an issue for you.
That sounds good. That's a great way of talking about it, the sea of sameness. I see that so often in my world. Everybody claims to be a financial planner, financial advisor, whatever term they use. And it's so hard for the general public to distinguish what that means. And there's a major ocean here of sameness.
Oh, that's so true.
So I'm glad to hear you say that that's the key to success, is to really differentiate yourself. And that's what makes the difference. Let's talk a little bit about your background. I understand that from the time you were 32, you owned your own agency. So how did you get from not being in an agency to owning one at 32?
Well, I tell you, there's a long history there, and I'll be brief. My father started the agency when he was when I was in high school, and it was a one-man shop. He was having a great deal of fun. I graduated college with a broadcast journalism degree, knowing that I did not want to be in front of the camera. So he asked me to work with him. And so I started working with what was then Sutorius Advertising, and we later renamed it Avocet Communications at age 21. I became president of the agency when I was 32 and part owner. So this has been my one and only career and my one and only stop as an agency executive.
Wow. That's pretty nice. They didn't have to worry about doing the usual rounds where you have to go and try your wings out somewhere and then come back to something else. That's pretty nice.
Well, I like to tell people that I had a 21-year interview.
you did?
Yes. Yeah, so
that's good.
It's the longest interview on the face of the planet. And I finally got the job.
Well, that's good. It's about time. Tell me about the name, Avocet. What does that mean?
It is a beautiful shorebird. And when we named the company, we knew we did not want to name it. Well, the reason we renamed it is because we, you know, you sound like a CPA firm or a lawyer, legal firm with your last name on the signage. So we wanted to have develop a name that was a little bit more unique, that sounded good, and that was at the beginning of the alphabet. And an Avocet, my father is an avid birder, outdoorsman, and the Avocet happens to be one of his favorite birds. So,
well, it's a good thing you didn't pick albatross.
Yeah, exactly. We'd be in a lot of trouble.
That wouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me something about what you do that differentiates you from all the other agencies that are out there.
At the end of the day, our job is to increase customer count. The way we go about that, I think, is very, very unique. We just mentioned our approach with the sea of sameness. All too often, again, people are too comfortable looking at themselves as though they are not the customer. When what we are able to do is provide that outside perspective, we approach everything from the eyes of the customer. And what is it, and we ask ourselves, what is it going to take to get me to purchase? Or visit, or whatever the goal is of the campaign. You know, the basics are all there. We're highly creative. We're very innovative. We've got incredible planning. We buy great deals with media, whatever the case might be. But that just gets you to the table. It really is the result at the end of the day in increasing customer count and the methodologies that we deploy that do differentiate us.
Okay. And so you've been doing this for a long time, half your life.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. How have you seen your industry change in those years that you've been working there?
You know, I think it's probably changed more than it did the first 50 years that the industry was around in the last 10 or 15 years. If you take a look at what the World Wide Web did to change human interaction with brands, it's pretty amazing. And we now have in the control of our own hands, we as consumers or business purchasers, we have in our own control when we want to interact with a brand for the most part. And so that in and of itself, technology, the World Wide Web, has changed the buying patterns so much that it's incredible. That's what we need to stay on top of, is trying to be ahead of the game with technology versus behind it.
Well, I think that for most people who are in a business, who own a business, you have to keep up with the trends of how do people interact with people in your business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most interesting things that I've come across is the distinction between something we now call inbound and outbound marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what that is?
Sure. And a lot of people look at it very, very differently. But inbound marketing is basically, what are we doing to interest someone so that they show that interest inbound to the company or the product or the retailer? So if it is social media marketing, and we've got a coupon, and they print out the coupon, and that brings them inbound, that's fantastic. If it mm-hmm. is a LinkedIn ad, and they click on it, and it brings them to a website, that is considered inbound. The outbound aspect of it is pretty broad as well. It could be simply put an email campaign that is interesting. And it brings them ultimately to a landing page, which then becomes inbound. It could be a television spot, quite frankly. And during that, let's say we've got a screen-to-screen viewing approach that we're going to deploy for a retail customer, and we've got a bunch of ads that are hitting during primetime television. Well, we might at that same time do a bunch of social media posts, have those social media ads running, send an email out during that time period to ultimately create a reaction that brings them to the store the following morning or to the store that week or to the website to sign up for something. That's how the two interact and work with one another, inbound and outbound.
Thanks. That was helpful. I think a lot of baby boomers are looking at all this and saying, I don't even know what those terms are. So that's helpful.
Well, good.
Another question I want to ask about your business. When you were in your early teens, let's call it, and your father was starting this agency, did you ever have any inclination that this is the path that you wanted to follow, or was that something that occurred after he had the business and you became interested in what he was doing? Which came first?
I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. I wanted to anchor the news. In fifth grade, we had our first, career day. And I went down to, I went to Boulder, Colorado and visited the Western News Bureau for KUSA Television, which was an NBC affiliate at the time, and spent the day with a reporter. I knew that's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until my senior year in college where my heart was not in it. I just realized that I it was not me. And I remember that time so vividly because I was so shocked that I didn't want to do it because it was what I had wanted to do my whole life. And yeah. It was at that time my father, quite frankly, had a huge sigh of relief. My grandparents, on the other hand, were so disappointed. And I think because at that time he finally realized maybe I could ask her to work with me. Thank God he did.
Well, what changed your mind? Why were you so intent on doing this and excited about it, and then all of a sudden you just said no? Did something happen?
Yeah, a couple things. I did not think that I was very good. And okay. I was nervous in front of the camera, and I could not get past that. I just could not. No matter what I did, I could not get past it. The other thing was this very, very close-knit family, very close. My parents grew up next door to one another. It is truly boy marries girl next door. Both mm-hmm. sets of grandparents were best friends. I did not want to leave home. I did not want to leave this area, and I knew that I would have needed to start out in very, very small market and build my way up. And I wanted to be home.
Those are all good reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that you figured that out before you launched into something you absolutely hated.
Yes. But you know what is amazing now? Now it's 25 years later. I've been for the last 15 years, pitching the stories, developing the stories. And now I have this awesome podcast myself, which is called Integrate and Ignite. And that allows me the opportunity to do a lot of what I thought I could never do. And so it all always ends up working its way out.
That's what I was just going to say. So now all of a sudden you're not in front of the camera, but you're still doing the kind of interviewing and things that you wanted to do.
That's exactly right.
So that's another question I wanted to ask. Tell me about where you came up with the name of your podcast, Integrate and Ignite. What does that mean?
So I do know this. I know that if people integrate their marketing communications programs, that is this, if they deploy two, three, four different media types. And by media, I mean it's all encompassing. It could be outbound strategies such as direct mail or email, or TV or radio, whatever the plan calls for. If they integrate several different media types, it could be professional selling, as a matter of fact. If they integrate those, they're going to ignite their sales. They're going to have more opportunities to interact with their customer, prove interest, and close a deal. And it's just been proven time and time and time again. If you go after one media type and you only do one thing, you're not going to cast wide enough a net. Not enough customers are going to know who you are, what you do, and why they should buy from you. And you will not have as good an ROI.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. How many of these podcasts have you done?
So I have recorded close to 30. We publish every Monday and Tuesday. We launched 6-8 weeks ago. And I've got an additional 15 in the queue. So I always like to have a pipeline of about 5 weeks.
Sounds great. So you obviously love it.
I'm having a blast.
I know. Okay, we have to do a full disclosure, okay? Because
here we go.
Laurie interviewed me for her podcast. Was it a week or 10 days ago?
Something like that.
So it was. It's been fun. I agree with you. I think doing these podcasts are just a blast. I love it. I love getting to know people and find out things about their history, their background. That for the most part, when you read a bio, no matter who it is, or any kind of wonderful write-up that's done no matter where, it never really, it's always in the positive, and it has to be. Mm-hmm. I get that. But we never really know what people have been through to get to that point. And I think that it's that information that helps us to relate to other people and say, hey, I like that woman. I like what she did, and I'd like to get to know her better. Maybe I should do business with her.
Right.
So I think that these kind of interviews are extremely helpful in branding because it certainly helps people to understand who you are and what your values are. And maybe it may make them want to do business with you. So I love it, and I'm glad you're doing it because I think it's great.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show as well. And, in a content-driven world, and back to a point that I made earlier about every one of us having control over when we see a message, interact with a brand, listen to a podcast, go to Facebook, watch TV, whatever it might be, it's important to have a content-driven strategy with any integrated program, and the podcast is one way of making that happen.
Yeah. Let me switch this around to some of the questions that I was curious about from my perspective about your history or your experience, I should say, maybe with money, because I find that a lot of women who have been successful in life have very interesting relationships and stories about money and how they learned about money and the values they have around money. So let me start by asking this question. What was your first memory about money?
Well, growing up, we didn't have to worry too much about it. Prior to my dad starting his own business, he was the director of a very large national trade show exhibit company. And we were well-to-do. And we did not lead a lavish life at all. My parents are still in the same home that we grew up in. But we traveled. And we traveled a lot, hiking, backpacking, fishing up in Canada. We were always out and about. And so I always had a real sense of security. But I will say when my father left that partnership and started his own business, as I mentioned, I was in high school. That is where, for the first time, I actually had to worry about money. And that was where we really started counting pennies. There are four of us kids. We were all going to college at the same time, too. It was a very, very difficult time period for my parents, which, of course, affected all of us.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you learn about money at that point?
I learned to value every penny. I learned to plan. I learned that it was very, very hard to earn a dollar. I learned that when you have your own business, you're totally dependent upon when, you know, the ability for your clients to pay in a timely fashion, and that a large percentage of them don't necessarily share that same value. They don't necessarily pay.
That was a nice way to say it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then
I've learned that many times since.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you did. What did you learn about debt?
You know, my parents never had debt. They always paid everything cash. They never used credit cards. Oh, I should say we had a few shopping, like retail shopping
like
cards.
Stores, yeah. Department store stuff. Yeah.
So they just didn't have a lot of debt. And that was probably one of the best. They lived below their means. They did not live a lavish life, and they did not believe in credit cards for the most part.
Mm-hmm. So now how did that affect your relationship to money when you became an adult and a business owner?
I remember to this day the first time I got a credit card, and I used it, and I couldn't believe, right out of college, and I think I had a $2,000 limit on a Visa. Mm-hmm. You know, this is back in 1989. I could not believe it. I could not believe that a bank just sent me a credit card. And I still remember I bought my first business suit with it. It was a black, beautiful business suit. I still remember using that card for the first time and what I bought. And I also abused that card. Mm-hmm. I, within probably 2 months, had maxed it out. Right. And learned very quickly that I should not have done that.
So how did that affect your decision to use debt in the business?
We've always tried to be debt-free. I think our clients making some bad decisions regarding extending credit to clients has created the debt for us. We did not, we've never, for the most part, overspent. We run a pretty tight ship with the percentages of our AGI and what we have to spend on salary versus operations, and what ultimately builds the profit of the business. So now, have we always had that available to us, you know, that credit during down times? Yes. And has it helped us get through so many difficult times? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's a necessary evil in business.
It is.
Would you say?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question in general. It may be something related to the business or not. But what would you say was your best and your worst financial decision?
So the best, I'll tell you what the worst was first because it led to the best. The worst financial decision we made was extending credit with media to our clients. So in essence, if we have $1 million media buy, in the past, we would always run that media through the agency. And what happens is if our clients don't pay on time, then that puts us behind with our media vendors. Mm-hmm. And at one point in time, we had a client that ended up filing bankruptcy and left us hanging, holding a large media invoice that was due, which we paid off despite the fact that we were not paid because it was very important to me, just from an ethics standpoint, to take care of the obligation that we had committed to, even though this client did not hold up their side of the bargain, their end of the bargain. So we went ahead and paid that off. It was very, very painful, very difficult time for the agency. It really left us in a very tough situation. But that led to the best decision we've ever made, which was not extending credit to clients. Now, Our clients pay all of their expenses direct to our vendors. We do not run the liability through the house anymore.
Okay. How about on the personal side?
You know,
best and worst decisions.
I think the probably some of the worst decisions I've ever made was very early in my career, lending money to a friend who didn't pay it back. And At the time, I really trusted this person. And I learned from that I've got no reason to lend someone money unless I can give them the money. And so I no longer lend people money. I think one of the things I'm most proud of was buying my own home as a single female at age 29. And I loved it. It was awesome. It was freeing. And it was a very, very proud moment for me and for my whole family, quite frankly.
That's really pretty neat. Now, was it in the same town, the same street?
So it was not. It was in a town probably 10 minutes, a small little farming community 10 minutes from the town I grew up in. But, You know, close enough, but yet far enough away as well.
Well, let me tie this piece in, because I did ask you the question ahead of time, what are you most proud of? And you said your MOM title. I love it. We get lost in the C-suite jungle, but at the end of the day, I'm a better person because of my children and husband, which is really wonderful to read. I mean, that's nice to hear that. But where did you meet your husband?
So this is kind of a fun little story. I was chairman of the DARE program for the state of Colorado as a volunteer. DARE stands for Drug Abuse Resistance Education. And there happened to be a captain on our board from Aurora Police Department. And this captain, Doug is his name, was a division chief at Aurora Police Department at the time. And Doug had been trying to set us up for years. And I just was like, there is no way I want to meet this man. He's 12 years older than me. He's divorced. He's got a son who's 10. This has got disaster written all over it. So I kind of was dating someone at the time, too, and we ended up breaking up. And the first phone call that I received was from Doug, and he said, okay, I know your heart is broken right now, but you've got to promise me one thing. And I said, what is that, Doug? He said, promise me you won't go on a single date until you meet Terry. And I said, okay. I'll promise you that. I'm not ready now, but I'll promise you that. So about 5 months later, I gave Doug a jingle and I said, okay, I'm ready to get on with life. Let's just get this over with. So
Oh, isn't that a wonderful way to approach?
I know. And I said, and I'm not going, you know, we're going to go on a double date. I'm just not going to meet this man alone. I mean, high ranking police official, and I'm not going to meet him alone. It's safety first. So we ended up going on a double date in Boulder, a great little restaurant, the Rio. And I wasn't quite sure at that time, you know, where my feelings were. Neither was Terry either. And a lot of it had to do with our age difference. So we went on a second date and felt, you know, maybe this could be something. We went on a third date and he took me to the theater. We saw Defending the Caveman, which is an incredible, incredible play. And I heard him laugh, and I fell in love with his laugh.
Wow.
And from there, you know, we got married 3 years later. And thank God I said yes. That's all I have to say.
That's wonderful. So now how many children do you have?
We have 4 children, and including my Scotty. And I became his mom when he was 12. And then we've got a 14, 13, and a 9-year-old. Scotty is about 30 right now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So your parents, were they okay with all this?
So they were a little bit worried as well, because of the age difference.
Yeah.
And it just is a non-issue. I needed someone older than me. I needed that maturity. Men my age, you know, in my late 20s and early 30s were still not grounded. They were still bar hopping. And it just was not me. I took very seriously the agency. I worked, you know, 60, 70 hours a week at that very young age trying to build the company. And I needed someone who had ambition. And Terry had that, of course. He eventually became the chief of police of one of the top 50 sized police departments in the union. So.
And where is it? That's Aurora?
That's Aurora, Colorado, which, of course, unfortunately, became known for the theater shooting that happened.
And is he was involved with all of that? Had to be.
He was. Right? I'll never forget the call coming in. He was deputy chief at the time, and the call came in within, you know, 90 seconds of the shooting happening, and we missed it. The phone rang on his mobile device, and we, you know, woke up, and he was running to the mobile device, and that phone call stopped, and then the house phone started ringing, and I picked up the house phone, and the mobile phone had started ringing again. He had two different commanders on the phone, and within within 2 minutes he was talking to both of them. He had got dressed and he hung up the house phone, was still talking to the commander on the mobile phone. He gave me a quick kiss and said, "I'll be home in a few days."
Wow.
And then of course it all played out, which was horrific for many families.
I'm getting chilled just listening to you say that. Yeah.
Very
horrible thing.
Horrible thing.
Okay, let's talk about something a little more pleasant, okay?
Hey, I'm ready for that too.
All right. So here's the question. What do you do for fun?
We have, you know, the children are very, very active. So our fun right now is their extracurricular activities. We are involved in several basketball leagues, football, cross country, Girl Scouts, volleyball. The list goes on and on and on, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So that really takes up a lot of our time. During the summer months, when we're outside of competitive competitions, we RV around the nation. And we love it. We always tie history into where we're going. We try to tie it in. For instance, our fourth grader this year is going to be learning about Colorado history. So this last summer, we went to Mesa Verde to study the incredible Indians and their history. And we went to Dinosaur National Monument, which is also a part of Colorado. And it was a great lesson for her ultimately to bring to her history class this year.
Wow, that's great.
That
sounds like a lot of fun. But you don't call it RV camping. You call it a glamping.
I do, or princess camping.
What's the difference?
Well, I like this.
What don't you do?
So I mentioned this in the beginning of the interview. I grew up with a muzzle loader in one arm, a fly rod, which I had made, and all the flies.
Wow.
So in the other arm, hiking boots on my feet and a backpack on my back. And that's what we did every weekend during the summer months. We trailed. We found our own campsites. In Rocky Mountain National Park or the Pawnee Grasslands, it doesn't matter where we were. And ultimately, when I was able to, once I got my first haircut and I used a curling iron, I started not to enjoy those weekends as much. It was very much
the necessities of life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So then what does that mean then? What did you do?
Well,
instead of hiking and going out and being one with nature,
we still did it. We just didn't enjoy it as much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we skied a lot during the winter months. We always were skiing, always skiing. As a matter of fact, the only time I would ditch class in high school would be one of those knocks on the window of my classroom, and it would have been one of my brothers, and it was the knock saying, "Okay, let's go. We're going to go up to the hill for the afternoon before mom and dad get home."
Wow,
and we would ditch school and we'd go ski Eldora.
Secrets. Okay. One other thing I would ask you in some of the questions that I sent to you earlier, we talked about some of the things you learned about money. Have you created any kind of structure with your family, with your children, to teach them about money?
We do. And I have to say, a lot of this has to do with my husband. I've learned so much through my husband and money management. He is very, very conservative. I have a career that is a bit more volatile. I'm the last person to pay myself if cash flow isn't great. I always make sure that we take care of our vendors and our team members first. His job was always secure. He's retired now. But he always, there's always going to be crime, quite frankly. There's always going to be people that need help from law enforcement. So that was the secure side. And when we were building our budgets, we built our budgets for the family with one salary in mind, not both. So we, too, have lived a very, very conservative life when it comes to finances. And we've taught our children the same thing. They do have an allowance. They do have... at least two of them have checking accounts. They all have savings accounts. And they really do understand the value of a dollar and that things cost money. Everything costs money. And as long as they understand the value of a dollar and that everything costs something and that you hate to lose something, I don't like to lose $5. That really helps them, I think, budget better and learn how expensive things can be, either through a lesson or what they might overspend on.
Like that $2,000 credit card.
I know. Seriously.
Yes. Well, that's great. Yeah. It sounds like they've started on the right path. That's good.
I certainly hope so.
Okay, all of you, my Power of the Purse community, these were invaluable insights and perspectives from my guest, Laurie Jones, all of which can help you move your career, your life, your relationships, and financial freedom forward. Thanks again, Laurie, for your time and knowledge.
It is my pleasure, Lynn. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.